You're listening to The Pulse.
Hey, Fort Stewart, it's Kevin Larson coming at you with this week's edition of The Pulse, Wynn Army Community Hospital's podcast that keeps you informed about all the things that are happening here at the hospital that affect you out there at Fort Stewart and Hunter Army Airfield. This week, I am joined by some very, very important people who do a lot of hard work, both at the scene, behind the scenes. You'll find them in the big buses. Well, they call them buses, but you'll see them in the ambulances with the red lights. I'm joined by the EMS crew here from Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield because we are celebrating EMS week. Team, thanks for joining me. Who do I have here for this podcast?
Jim Ochoa, Chief EMS.
William Brzezinski, Supervisor Paramedic.
Ashley Morrow, Paramedic.
Guys, thanks for joining me. It's EMS week. So that's the week where we celebrate all the things EMS does because you guys work 24/7, every day of the year, rain or shine, doesn't matter. You guys are out there getting patients to the emergency room, making sure that people get medical care at that moment when they need it most. Let's talk about the history of EMS week, first of all, but also talk about a little bit about yourselves. Like how you got started in EMS, what prompted you? Did you always want to be a paramedic? I mean, I can tell you from my own personal experience as a child, you know how kids go through things they want to do, jobs they want to do. There was a brief stint where I wanted to be a paramedic, and I couldn't have enough ambulance matchbox and ambulance Legos in my life. And then I became a public affairs officer. But enough about me. Let's talk about you. How did you get started as an EMS?
How about you go first, Ashley?
I got started 13 years ago. I initially started in the fire department and then fell in love with the EMS side of it. So I started with medical training, and then I ended up at Fort Stewart about a year ago.
I got started in EMS because, well, I wanted to be a firefighter and went to EMT school thinking that was my way into the fire department. But then when I realized I don't want to run into a burning building, I went to paramedic school.
My evolution, I started out as a 91 Bravo, an Army medic, today known as a 68 Whiskey. And that's kind of where it all started. I've been here since 1997 and have held every functional position as a paramedic up to chief at this point.
So that's an interesting point you bring up there about levels of paramedic. I mean, paramedic is like the top, right? And then there's the EMTs and things like that. Can you talk about that a little bit, the levels of certification to become an emergency medical professional?
So there are three, or actually four tiers that are recognized. There's the emergency medical responder, which is the basic entry level. That's most public servants, so firefighters, law enforcement can achieve this certification. It's essentially first aid, very similar to the Army's Combat Lifesaver program. They learn those very basic skills. The next program up from that, and you can be an EMR and never go anything further than that. That's perfectly fine to do that job. The next skill level above that is the EMT basic. The EMT basic is a certification. Most programs are anywhere from 120 to 160 hours of training. And it is basically a little bit more than first aid with some other things like med administration, some therapies that typically you wouldn't give at the EMR level. There's an intermediate phase in these skill levels, which is the advanced EMT, formerly the intermediate. And the advanced EMT, I like it more to like a trauma skill. So they have all the skills of an EMT. However, we enhance those skills by teaching them IV therapy, some med administration. They get to learn some and use advanced airway techniques, and that kind of is a bridge between the EMT and the paramedic. And then at the end of that tier is the paramedic. The paramedic is anywhere from about 1,200 hours plus of training, and that's essentially, those individuals are taught advanced assessment skills, some medical procedures that typically are performed in the hospital, advanced airway maneuvers, some minor surgical maneuvers that are emergent in managing airway. We do medication administration for resuscitation, pain, and symptoms. And then, of course, we apply concepts of cardiology, interpreting EKGs, and just numerous other emergencies that are time-sensitive for those patients. And then there's a final tier that's not very well established nationally. It is recognized, but each state is moving through it, and they call these the critical care / flight paramedic certifications. And so these are individuals that their training is specific for the environment they're in. So in IE, high acuity patients, critical care medics and flight paramedics will learn advanced procedures, some other medications that typically a paramedic would normally give, and they would handle patients that might have a little bit more significant medical needs for transport than what the normal paramedic would handle.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So possibly talking about those flight medics, could that potentially be like stroke medications, something along those lines?
So, yeah, so the kind of what it boils down to is like invasive monitoring, ventilator management, sedation and management of a patient that's under the care with the ventilator. We may be using medications to induce a coma so that we can manage their airway. We may be placing either needle thoracostomies like a chest tube or a full-on thoracostomy in that instance. Recently, the utilization of ultrasound is another thing that a lot of critical care medics will do. And then, of course, we still will interpret like lab values and make adjustments on the ventilators and stuff. I mean, there's just a lot that kind of encompasses that. So,
very interesting. So to bring it back to the reason we're talking with you guys about EMS Week, a week was created for you guys, obviously, because of these skill sets that you guys have, this knowledge that you bring, this life-saving. I mean, basically, you guys are the first people to touch someone when they need medical help. You get on the scene, you make assessments. So this week really recognizes everything that you do. What's the history of EMS Week?
So it's more of awareness. So it was initially to kind of bring awareness to the service or the skill that's provided to the community, and an opportunity for really not for us to be recognized, but to go out into community to say, hey, this is why we're here to serve you. Over the years, as anything else, we tend to migrate to more of a recognition type thing. So institutionally and organizationally and nationally, every year for 1 week out of the year, they choose a theme. And they recognize EMS providers for the care that they provide in the pre-hospital environment.
So what is this year's theme?
Honoring our past, forging our future.
So it goes in line with what you were saying about mm-hmm. how it's not, it initially started as that week to say, hey, this is what we do. And it's become this, hey, this is to celebrate you. So this theme kind of brings it back to the point of, hey, we're EMS, this is what we do, and yes, thank you that you recognize that we have an important job. That's kind of what that theme sounds like to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, listen, the mission here for us at Fort Stewart is that, first of all, serving a military community is a lot different than serving your standard community that's outside the gate. And the way that I look at this is, and having been a soldier, I understand this. When it's time for me to go do my job, the one thing I want to make sure is that my family is safe, and that if anything were to happen, that there's qualified people that are going to take care of them. And so two parts of this. The first part is I want every service member to know that the crews here at Fort Stewart and Hunter are legitimately here to take care of their families and other service members. That's first and foremost our primary mission. The second part of that is pretty much the insurance of it, right? Hey, I know those guys are going to take care of our families, our other service members. I know that they're going to do a good job. I don't have to worry about that. And that's really the two things I always want to push forward about what we're doing. I couldn't imagine being deployed and being concerned, hey, is the emergency care going to be good for my family if I'm not there? Now, granted, I'm pretty sure they're not thinking that way, but as long as that I put that in the forefront of what I'm doing, every time that a tone drops, we respond to a call, I'm always remembering that there's somebody's loved one that may not be presently there with them that's it wants to ensure that we're doing the right thing and that we're providing the proper care an appropriate time to help their loved ones.
And we'll take a short break right here, and when we come back, we'll talk more about what Fort Stewart Hunter Armory Airfield EMS, their mission here on the installation.
It's May, Mental Health Awareness Month. As you know, taking care of your mind is just as important as your body. We all face challenges causing us to feel stressed, anxious, or feel down. But you don't have to go through it alone. Here at Wynn Army Community Hospital, we have a caring team of mental health professionals ready to help. We offer confidential counseling and support for everyone. Taking care of your mental health is a sign of strength, and it allows you to be your best self for you and those you love. This May and every month, don't suffer in silence. Reach out for help. Visit our website, www.win.tricare.mil, to find mental health resources. Remember, a healthy mind is a happy mind. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Gina Wright, Chief of the Behavioral Health at Wynn Army Community Hospital.
And we're back. You're listening to The Pulse, the podcast that keeps you informed about all the things happening here at Wynn Army Community Hospital across the Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield footprint. And I'm joined by the team here from our emergency medical services at Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield. And we're talking about EMS week. And now we're going to get into the more specifics of what the EMS here on Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield does, their mission, how they support soldiers and families, and to reinforce how you can get in touch with them if you need them. So, team, thanks for joining me on this edition of The Pulse.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that. You were touching on it before the break, Jim, about, you know, providing emergency care so that when soldiers deploy, they know that their families are taken care of. What does the day-to-day look like here for you? Is there a day-to-day? Is there a routine?
Day-to-day for us? So just to kind of give you a broad overview, Fort Stewart EMS, the pre-hospital emergency medical services, we're responsible to respond to and cover 444 square miles of the installation. So that doesn't just leave us here at Fort Stewart, but also at Hunter. We're responsible for everybody here in the Cantonment area, as well as into the training area. Our crews are working four cohorts. So essentially a platoon. And so these four platoons, they work a day on with 3 days off. So the crews that come on duty, they come on duty for 24 hours. They check off their equipment, make sure that we're prepared and ready to go. And then essentially we wait for the tones to drop and the request for us to come and help folks. They can come a couple of different ways. They can either come through the 911 center. Most people on the installation, if they pick up their phone, they can dial 911. What's your emergency? If it requires an ambulance, they dispatch us. The training area, however, how that we're activated through that is through range control. So the service members will contact range control, sit there and say, hey, we have an accident or an injury or an illness out here in the training area, and we'll coordinate the movement via range control to get those folks out of the training area into the appropriate level of care.
And I've noticed if you drive along the highways, there are the ambulance access points where you'll link up with anyone coming out of the field. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a mitigation tool. We're fully capable of going to the point of injury, wherever the individual is injured, ill, for lack of a better term. However, when we place those AXPs, it allows us to expedite the process. Instead of us having to push further into the training area, care can be rendered at the point of injury. The service member can then be evacuated to the AXP, and at the AXP, we'll greet the patient, do another evaluation, determine whether we're coming to Wynn or if we're pushing to Memorial and Savannah.
And I mean, in a situation like that, things like that, it helps with time matters, seconds matter, and you're able to respond that much more quickly.
Absolutely. So everything, when somebody's injured, especially injuries. What we know is that we used to refer to this thing called the golden hour. Now it's more so referenced as the golden period. Every meaningful intervention that can occur from the moment that the patient is injured until the patient gets the definitive care, it helps improve outcome and lengthens that time of the point of it, of the golden hour or the golden period.
So we haven't heard much from the other two here joining us for this podcast, but I'm curious to hear, what's your day-to-day look like? What have you experienced here on Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield that makes your service as a paramedic, you know, that much more important, that makes you realize that aha moment of, hey, I am doing something that matters?
I think people have this misconception that all of our calls are this mentally or critically ill patients or this traumatic injury where they have blood and gore everywhere, but not every call is like that. We have a mission to make sure that somebody's worst day, whether it be ill or traumatically injured, maybe it's mental health they need help with or some emotional support, we're there to make their day a little bit better. So if we can be a shining light on their worst day, then we've accomplished our mission. Whether they are sick or not, we're there to help them.
And that's a good point. I mean, it is Behavioral Health Month. I mean, not everything, like you said, is a traumatic injury. It could be something they need help mentally, and you guys would also be the first ones to possibly be there and help a person with that kind of situation. What in your tool bag allows you to be able to provide that kind of care if someone needs it?
We have communication assessment skills that help us communicate, de-escalate a situation, or just as a human being, just provide emotional support for someone who needs it at that time.
So what I'm hearing you saying is empathy is something that's important to being a paramedic.
Absolutely.
What makes being a paramedic, I mean, you said you wanted to run into burning buildings initially, that you wanted to be a firefighter, but then you changed course and you decided you wanted to be a paramedic. When did that aha moment happen, and what makes you keep coming back to work every day here at Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield?
I guess just the fact that I can provide something that some people just can't get from other places. You know, that emotional support, even if it's just providing them with an avenue of how to obtain certain information, makes it that much satisfying. So.
And then to talk about the fact that, you know, not every call is awful. It could be just something more routine, or not to say mundane, but something that's more, you know, simple or not traumatic, but still important enough to get a paramedic out on scene. How many calls do you guys respond to in a year? I mean, or even in a day? How busy are you guys here on Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield?
So, I mean, it waxes and wanes. Right now, we're about 1,500 calls a year. When everybody's home and they're training, we can be up to 2,000 calls a year. So we're not a high-volume service. The way I always tell folks is here, it's always good until it's not. And that's kind of the best way to look at it. We don't run into the same issues as they would off post. So most folks, they activate us and utilize us in a way that's appropriate. So we don't get the random call for somebody that, you know, my tooth hurts. There's no such thing as an emergency medical dentist in our instance. So we don't get those kind of tooth pain calls, so to speak. Or, you know, I just need a ride to the hospital. We really don't get those type of calls. Most folks that call us are folks that are in need, whether, like you said, if they're ill or injured, or if it's emotional. I can tell you, as a matter of fact, I think one of the things that I'm privileged to have folks that I work with here in the section is that we all have adult experiences. We all have children. Some of us even have grandchildren, not me, but most have grandchildren. And so we know how to work with children. We know how to work with adults. We know how to work with our geriatric population. And so we can understand from our life experiences how to empathize with our patient demographics in different ways to kind of help them find the resources that they need.
Yeah, that touches back on the point about the empathy and just being a human and interacting with other people the way that they want to be interacted with. And, you know, there's the golden rule, treat people the way you want to be treated, and then there's the platinum rule, treat mm-hmm. people the way that they want to be treated. So that just brings it back to point about empathy is an important tool. It's probably the biggest tool you use when you're out on a scene, isn't it?
It's a calming tool. When people dial 911, they're looking for help. Something is definitely out of their realm of control. And so our fellow firefighters and law enforcement individuals that respond on the scene, they may have a little bit of medical training and have some of those empathy skills. But the one thing that they know when the paramedics show up is that, hey, they have the medical skills, and the only thing we tack on top of that is a little bit more empathy than maybe the police or fire would provide. And so we have the ability to really kind of sequester those events and say, hey, come to the back of the ambulance, we'll take you to a calm space, and then we can de-escalate and work these things down. And hey, I appreciate your problem, and you know, this is how we're going to help you kind of work through that issue. So we have our interface and our interactions with the patients in those environments alleviate the stress of, like, specifically law enforcement of having to kind of work those issues. So it's adjunctive to the system that we're kind of the empathetic conscious of the public safety system.
Right. Like is often said in meetings where fire and police and EMS are sitting together, you know, fire puts the wet stuff on the hot stuff. Police takes care of the perpetrator, and then you guys are providing the care because you care.
Right. I also like to add to that, and this is kind of on a humorous note. I typically, you know, everybody, you know, we have the bravest and our finest, right? It's usually how we refer to the police officers and the firefighters. But I usually tell them all of them need a hero. That's why we have paramedics.
I like it. Sounds like it makes sense to me. I mean, it makes sense. You've got to have somebody that everybody looks up to.
That's right.
And if you can't look up to EMS, who can you look up to?
That's right.
You talked about it a little bit, kind of, about the fact that you don't get those calls that other EMS services out in the communities would get. Touching on communities, what kind of relationships do we have with the communities outside of the gate? Do we provide any kind of support, MOUs, memorandums of understanding, memorandums of agreement, things like that, to the supporting communities?
So we do have mutual aid agreements, and we do respond when requested. But I have to say that it's not frequent when we're requested to come off the installation. As a whole, the EMS services across the United States are stressed. And so fortunately, within Liberty County here outside of Fort Stewart, they're able to adequately manage most of their calls. And so it's very, very rare that we get called out. Chatham County, Savannah, same thing there. We probably support the city of Savannah maybe about two or three times a month with mutual aid calls to help them with the sick folks. And those are typically prioritized as the high priority patients. So it's same thing. If it was a low priority patient, they wouldn't request mutual aid for us.
All right. Well, I think I've taken up enough of your guys' time, but is there anything you'd like to add or close out with for EMS week or anything else in the medical paramedic lane that you want the public out there to know about the services you provide or what you do or why you do it?
I'll say this. If you want to help people and you want to be involved in healthcare, EMS is an emergency medical services or pre-hospital or emergency medical care isn't a bad place to start. There is going to be and is presently a shortage of EMTs and paramedics across the United States. Things are improving as far as pay and benefits. But this would be a call out to folks that are interested, you know, go take a CPR class, go take a stop the bleed class. If that intrigues you to want to do more, go to an EMT course, get that done. If that wants you to do more, become a paramedic and then become part of the ranks. So if anything is to come of EMS week this year, I would like to see more people want to be involved in our services. Not necessarily Fort Stewart, but emergency medical services across the United States, because we need folks that want to take care of other people.
So you heard it here. Jim Ochoa is making an open call to anyone that has empathy and an interest in pre-hospital medical care, and you like dealing with people, you like going out and having a day that could potentially be unpredictable or predictable because you have to keep up your training. Become an EMT, become a paramedic, and serve the public in a way that, you know, the police and fire can look up to you and be their hero.
Exactly.
Because everybody needs a hero. Well, that's it for this episode of The Pulse. This is Kevin Larson at Wynn Arm Community Hospital from the Public Affairs Office signing off. Team, thanks for joining me to celebrate EMS Week and what you do, and my personal thanks to you.
For being there
on the front line. And that's it for this episode, and I'll catch you on the flip side.